This week, one analyst said that linear TV is dying a slow death. We discuss the merits of the statement and look at how this oldest of video entertainment formats is reinventing itself online. Let's get started.
Of the Video News End Screen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from End Screen Media is with me on the phone. And Colin, it's been a busy week on the political front, that's for sure. Both our heads are spinning a little bit. We were both Super Tuesday states on Tuesday.
We were, and it was a lot of fun here in California, although I have to say, I think if you voted early and you voted for anybody but Biden or Bernie Sanders, you were probably pretty unhappy.
Yeah, things have moved pretty fast this week, that's for sure. Excuse me, but we are not here to talk about politics. We are here to talk about video, as we always are. And we have two areas, sort of interdependent areas, that we want to talk about on today's edition. And the first one is going to relate to the linear TV is dead narrative, right?
That is. And you spotted some interesting comments, data from Moffitt Nathanson and a couple of other people this week. So why don't you brief us on what you found?
Yeah, so I wrote about this on Wednesday. And the gist of it is that we all know that there's a big prevailing narrative out there that linear TV is dead. And that's a little bit of a high-level kind of narrative, because the sub-narrative is that sports and news are still doing at least okay. They're somewhat declining, although even that depends on the sport. I think NFL was actually up this past season. But overall, for entertainment, networks, linear viewing continues to decline. And it's declining even further or more rapidly, I suppose, for younger people. And this is really the encroachment of the both SVOD services, the subscription services, and also the free ad-supported services, the services you like to call FAST, or other people know as AVOD. So I had this funny experience on Tuesday that I received an email from Michael Nathanson and Moffitt Nathanson in the morning with a note that was jam-packed, as it always is. Their research is fantastic. But with all the latest data, basically, on the demise of linear TV. And I won't go through all that data, but just at a very top line, the numbers that Michael called out were that across broadcast and cable, in two-plus households, consumption was down so far in 2019 an aggregate of 8%, but live is only down 5%, non-live was down 11%. That was for broadcast, and then actually that was for the aggregate. And then among the top 20 cable TV networks, consumption for two plus was down 9%, live content was down 5%, non-live was down 11%. So basically the same. And he went on to call out how obviously it's even more precipitous for the younger people. So that was in my inbox first thing on Tuesday morning. And then Tuesday afternoon, very coincidentally, I had a call with Jill Goldfarb, who is the VP of Linear Programming at Jukin Media. And Jukin is a name that a lot of folks may not be familiar with, but it's kind of like a powerhouse in the user-generated content and viral video distribution world. And now they've actually started to go into their own original content as well. And they launched their third linear channel, a channel called People Are Awesome. They launched a couple of linear channels about a year and a half or so ago. So this is not their first foray into linear. And so there I was talking to Jill about the fact that they're leaning into linear, while literally having open on my desktop Michael's note about more evidence about the demise of linear. So it was a little bit of an odd moment there, and it prompted me to write about and try to explore, like, how do you reconcile these two concepts? And I thought actually Jill's commentary on this was very valuable. On the one hand, we have more premium entertainment content than ever. We have cord cutting increasing. We have more SVOD services than ever. But people are making choices about what they want to spend their money on, what services they want to subscribe to. And once they get beyond their choices, they are basically seeking out what they can get for free. And if free content is good and it's compelling, they're willing to watch some ads as part of the trade-off. And that's basically what the Jukin model is that they're finding particular audiences to go after and go after them with compelling, authentic content and support them with an ad load that's actually not even a light ad load. It's a typical TV level ad load, and they're getting an audience. And it, I think, kind of goes to show, and I know you're going to say this as well because we talked a little bit before we started recording, but it does go to show that kind of the more things change, the more they stay the same, even despite this massive abundance of on-demand content. There's still something about the comfort and the lack of friction of just flipping on the TV and having a linear channel run and either having it on as sort of ambient noise or being able to watch it but not have to focus too heavily on it. There's probably going to be a place for that kind of content for a long time to come. And connected TVs have created this perfect environment for that type of mixing of linear TV, or, you know, the remnants of linear TV plus sports and news, along with all the on-demand choices. So it was an interesting day, an interesting 24 hours, I suppose, if I throw in what happened with the Democratic primary. And just a reminder that anytime you see a headline, there's probably a lot of truth to it, but there could well be some exceptions floating around under the surface that are worth paying attention to.
Right. The headline that the death of linear, while it's really compelling, I mean, you touched on a lot of points there, Will, that basically support the idea that it's not dead at all. It's just changing, and it's just moving online. And look, we're seeing big success now for companies like Xumo and Pluto TV that both have linear models online. Pluto, I think, has over 22 million monthly active users. Xumo, I think, is up to 10 million now or something. And by the way, when I talked to the folks at when I talked to Tom Ryan over at Pluto TV, he's telling me that they're getting engagement of, I forget the exact number, but I think it's something like 90 minutes or something like that. So when people watch these services, they really do watch just like they do with TV. And for me, what this really means, how I see this breaking out, is that there is still a big room in people's schedules for watching linear content. What they're going to do when they're really focused, they're going to watch SVOD services and they'll probably watch ad-free. But as you say, you know, there are plenty of opportunities to watch TV outside of that really focused viewing time. And that's when they'll probably flip on a channel, a movie channel on Pluto, or a news channel, or a local interest channel on one of these SVODs, one of these fast linear services. And as you say, you know, with Jukin Media launching new linear channels, I see it too. I think we talked about Players Sports Network. They've just launched a new sports-oriented network on Samsung smart TVs inside of Samsung TV Plus. And this is a straight linear network. So, you know, as we know, the smart TVs have got these integrated in, as you say. So people can watch this channel for free just by hooking up to Wi-Fi. So I do think that we have, there's a lot of life in linear. It's very clearly changing as it moves online, and the advertising opportunity is changing too. But I just think there's a heck of a lot of life in this format. It's worked terribly, terribly well for the last 80 years. And I don't think I think it's got legs yet.
So you're in the category of the more things change, the more they stay the same, I think, huh?
I think it's pretty fair to say that is true.
Human nature just does not change. Yeah, I think there is something to say for that, to be said for that. I do wonder, though, like, as an example, we were talking before the recording started that Google YouTube TV has blacked out. I shouldn't say blacked out. They haven't reached an agreement with YES Network, which is the Yankee Sports Network in New York. They did reach an agreement with 19 other RSNs owned by Sinclair. And you do have to wonder just a little bit that sports and news are the biggest components of linear, are going to be the biggest components of linear viewing. If you see those declining, whether it's because operators are not willing to pay the increased rates for the RSNs or the national sports networks, or some other reason, that linear would, I think, come down even further than it has. And that's before talking about all the investments that are being made in premium entertainment content. We haven't seen the launch of Peacock and HBO Max yet, et cetera. We haven't really seen Disney Plus or Apple TV Plus ramp up their programming yet. So it does seem like it's getting ever more crowded on the on-demand side, and that sports and news could be under, or I should say will likely be under, continued pressure going forward.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. And I don't know what's going to happen with that, Will. The RSNs do seem like a model. We talked about this a little bit last week, but the RSNs do seem like a model that seem particularly vulnerable to the decline in pay television on many counts, right? I think the reason that YouTube TV opted not to up with YES Network, was because it's so darn expensive, and it really is only appealing to one part of the country, and that probably saves them a bunch of money by doing that. And as we know, the virtual MVPDs, they really operate on very, very small margins, and a network like YES Network rather is very expensive and really has a big impact on their margins. So I can totally understand why they'd want to leave it out. I wonder exactly how Sinclair made out in this particular fight. I have a sneaking suspicion that they probably didn't get very much of an increase at all for the other RSNs, that they probably, I suspect that maybe that's why they didn't get agreement on YES, because YES was so expensive and the others were much cheaper and they didn't get much increase. But anyway, I guess we'll never know what happened in those negotiations.
Well, we'll find out. Opening day is going to be upon us soon enough. We'll find out whether YouTube TV and YES can come to some agreement prior to that. It does seem like it would be mutually advantageous for them to come to an agreement. But on the other hand, I wrote a short piece earlier today, we're recording on Thursday, that YouTube TV may be looking to make a test case out of YES, and YES may have been looking for increases that were just not reasonable, and YouTube TV decided to draw the line. So we'll have to wait and see how that one turns out. But in the meantime, we're on this topic of something that you wrote about this week as well, which is this kind of blurring of the lines between pay TV and over-the-top video services. So why don't you tell us a little more about what you wrote about this week and how it ties into what we were just talking about with respect to linear and sports?
I sure will, and it really ties in pretty closely, Will, because there's a company called Zonify that's CEO of that is Jeff Weber, and I talk to Jeff quite a lot. And what Zonify does is that they create they create 13 channels, 13 linear-like channels from on-demand content, which they get from partners online. And they're things like, they have cool channel names like Brainiac, Hangout, and Inform. And there's a, you know, as I say, there's 13 of these things. And what they do is they license these channels to, or they provide these channels to pay TV operators. And the pay TV operators can put them right in their guide. But remember how I said linear is sort of changing online? Zone TV is a perfect example of that with their Zonify app. Because the way these channels work, first of all, each channel has this theme. And there's sort of an AI in the background that's watching the behavior of the viewers of these channels. And if they skip stuff, then it remembers that and shows less of that content on that channel for that viewer. So it's basically learning the things that you like and customizing these channels to your likes. Now, of course, you couldn't do this in linear television, right? This is something you just can't do. But that one of the interesting points that Jeff makes is that they have human programmers, and the AI doesn't completely customize the channel. The human programmers keep injecting new stuff in that they think is generally of interest to people on the individual channel. So there's plenty of variety going on here as well. And they also have this thing called MyTV, which is the 13th channel. And that's completely run by the AI. So you can tune to this. You can tune to this channel, and it is just programmed from across all the content that's available, and see, you know, see a completely custom channel. So that sort of fits very much with our linear discussion. But I got to tell you, Will, that this is not the only way that online and online TV and pay TV operators are working together. And there was an article about there were several pieces that were discussing how Disney Plus has reached agreement with Sky to appear on the Sky Q set-top box in the UK. Sky, of course, is now owned by Comcast. And this is a really good deal, I think, for both companies. And, you know, obviously it helps Disney with distribution. Sky has only has about 10 million customer relationships between its Sky satellite service and its Now TV online service. So that's plenty of exposure for Disney Plus. And it's another reason why people should continue to pay their Sky subscriptions, because they get this nice integrated experience with some of the top services. So they get, you know, unified searches and one place to come and find everything. So it's and I'm guessing that, although this wasn't in the announcement, I'm guessing maybe unified billing as well. So there's a lot of synergies here going on between pay television and online TV. We're certainly seeing it here with Comcast and with others integrating in Zone TV. Oh, and I should say Zone TV is already on Xfinity, and this particular announcement was that Zone TV was now on Cox Contour. So we're seeing plenty of examples of these two coming together. And, you know, I think it's beneficial on both sides. It helps slow the decline of the traditional pay TV service and helps the online providers reach people who they may have had difficulty reaching anyway because they're not big online consumers yet. So plenty of synergies going on there.
So, Colin, this is a little bit like what Comcast, as an example, did with Netflix and Amazon, etc. They just essentially incorporated them and their content into the X1 interface. But my understanding is that there's no fee. Comcast isn't paying anything for access.
That's right.
It's actually the reverse, that Comcast gets paid by Netflix to the extent that they drive any new subscribers. And
yep,
with this Zone TV model, this is not a subscription service. This is a free ad-supported service, right?
You bet. So, and as you say, Comcast gets to participate a little bit. Comcast and Cox get to participate in the advertising revenue that these channels generate. So it's a really positive experience. You know, the operators aren't paying license fees for the content, and they get to participate a little bit in the revenue, so they have every reason to help these services be successful.
Right, that's what I was going to ask you is, is it actually a revenue opportunity for the operators? Because if so, then it seems like a no-brainer. On the one hand, in the current world, they're paying these carriage fees month in and month out to all the ad-supported cable TV networks whose linear ratings are declining, as we talked about in the beginning. And, you know, of course, they get a share of the ad inventory as well, the ad time. But here with Zone, they don't pay anything, and they still get an ad, they still get a piece of the ad revenue. So any viewership that's shifting over seems like a net positive from the operator standpoint, not to mention it's leverage for them as they go in and negotiate with the existing TV networks to try to whittle them down on what they're going to pay them.
It is, Will. Yeah, so I think it's a very, very positive relationship indeed for both parties, and that's why I think we're just going to see a heck of a lot of this going forward. And but I will, I just want to say one thing. I know we're getting close to being out of time, but I just want to say one thing about this. I saw some interesting data this week from a company called Grabyo, and they were basically, they did a survey of consumers and basically came back and said that, you know, 71% of US consumers say that they will not have paid TV by 2025. I know people often say things and don't follow through, but the funny thing here is that they're already probably halfway there, because that group is comprised of people that have already cut the cord or never had pay TV in the first place. So it's a much shorter jump than I think it may at first appear. But why am I going there with this? Well, I know the compelling reason for people to cut the cord is because it's very expensive and they're just not using it as much, right? And so they look at other alternatives. Maybe they cord shift to a virtual MVPD. The underlying problem is the cost. So although pay television operators are adding the online services to their pay TV set-top boxes, I do not believe in the end that it will be enough to save the expensive service that they're providing. I think people are still going to cut the cord and they'll just look for somebody else to aggregate, unless they do what Comcast and Sky are doing. Because what Comcast and Sky are doing is they both have online boxes which they will give you. In the UK, they've got this Now TV box, which is dirt cheap, and they provide the aggregation function of all the online stuff, and you can subscribe to Sky services through it and others through it. And in the US, Comcast has got Flex, which is a box that they will give you, has a bunch of services on which you can subscribe to, and you know, which sort of brings everything together and is anchored with their broadband service. I think that is where, you know, looking out to 2025, that's the big opportunity for operators. Yes, they should continue to integrate the online services into the set-top box, but I think they need to be thinking outside of the pay TV universe and in this sort of Flex Now TV type role with consumers, which I think is valuable and will help keep those consumers anchored to their other services, broadband, etc.
Yeah, and of course that assumes that they have a broadband service to begin with, which is part of the reason why the satellite operators are in the trouble at their end, because if
that's exactly right,
the world unfolds like you're describing, then they're clearly the odd man out. And then you have AT&T TV, which is a slightly different model of what you just described, right? Because they're looking to charge extra for the second box, I think. Isn't that what their model is? Plus, they're at $50, and then there's additional fees on top of that. So price-wise, they're not super competitive either. But it's still kind of in the same direction of what you're talking about, I think, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's moving in that direction, and I think that's where they'll all move. So. Yeah.
All right, Colin. Well, we shall see. Good chatting, as always.
As always, Will.
All right, thanks everyone for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News and Screen Media podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.